Well, I was born in Trinidad, in the Caribbean, but both my parents were from Barbados. And when I was seven, my father was transferred to Texaco, Canada, and we all moved up to Toronto. So I grew up in Toronto. I was educated there. I went to University of Toronto. I was always very analytical about life and about things. My parents were practicing Christians, and we went to church three times a week. One of the things I couldn't reconcile, either mathematically or scientifically, was the Trinity. And I was always questioning, and I was investigating different religions. When I was in grade 10, we studied world religions, and as part of our studies, we had a field trip to the mosque. And so when I went to the mosque, I was mesmerized really by the adhan, by the call to prayer, by the salat, by the prayer itself. And I stayed behind when others went back to the school, and I spoke with one of the women there, and I asked her about, what Muslims believe. And she said, "Well, if you want to be a Muslim, all you have to say is La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah." So I did. So officially, that's when I became Muslim. But, that lasted for a few months. My father would drive me to the mosque. I told him I was doing some extracurricular research. And gradually, I stopped. I tried to be a Muslim on my own, but it didn't really work. So a few years passed, and two of my cousins became Muslim. By the time I got to University of Toronto, I was doing lots and lots of research into, self-exploration, trying to find my place in the universe, trying to define who I was and what my relationship to the Creator was. I actually decided at one point there was no God. And it was in the microbiology lab after doing an experiment with chromatography that I looked down and saw the different shades of chlorophyll that I decided, yes, there is definitely a God. It was this magnificent epiphany. And then decided, okay, if there's a God, then I have to somehow, what's my relationship to God? What's my responsibility? So at that time, there were several men who had, instead of going to Vietnam, decided to take the Canadian option. And they were draft dodgers and from America, and they had become Muslim. So we had these raging debates about politics and religion and life there at the student union, and I was part of that. And everything about Islam, I had kind of made up in my mind what would be the perfect religion. And when I heard about the tenets of Islam again, I decided that that would be my spiritual path. Having grown up in an environment that was predominantly all white, we were the only, myself and one other family, my family and another family were the only people of color in the whole school. I didn't really experience any racism, so that wasn't my background. Nation of Islam didn't resonate with me at all. However, there was, during these debates, there was this constant theme that even if you are the most politically aware and politically conscious person, there's a step after that, and the step after that is spiritual consciousness. What I was seeking really was a formula for not only spiritual peace and inner peace, but also something that gave me form, structure, and self-mastery, and that all of that was in Islam. The late 60s was a time of social upheaval, and everyone was doing their own thing, quote unquote, tune in, turn on, drop out, that was the atmosphere. And so I was always inquisitive about existence and really felt that I needed structure in my life, and Islam certainly afforded that. I actually dropped out of the University of Toronto, went back to Barbados, where my parents had always kept their home, and we would sometimes go back for winter vacations. So I decided, this time of upheaval, I knew I needed a change. and hadn't decided what the change was going to look like yet. So I decided to find myself. That was another mantra of the 60s, find yourself. So I went to Barbados and spent several months on the beach. And decided, you know, then to become Muslim. So when I came back quite a different person than I had left Toronto as. And since I was the kind of teenager that really tested my parents' patience anyhow, I was always into different things. It seemed to be another phase that I was going through, so everybody just said, okay, this is another one of her things, we'll just wait until, you know, she comes out the other side. And so when they realized that, no, I had really made a substantial change, I think at first, though, they were sad that I hadn't chosen their religious tradition. They were happy that I had at least chosen a religion, a tradition of faith. And so the change in my personal being became quite evident in terms of my calm, a peace, and living a less kinetic, frenetic life. And I think that was a welcomed change. After I became Muslim, there was only really a handful of Canadians who had embraced Islam. One of them was my cousin, and she was married to Bilal Phillips. And there was also, who is now Sheikh Abdullah Hakim Quick, was also there in Toronto. So we had a very small community, and, you know, a few of us, and we would sit and debate and discuss Islam, and they decided that in order to get, you know, the essence of Islam, they would need Arabic. And so the impetus was, you know, go somewhere where you can learn Arabic and then you can translate the Quran for yourself. And because, of course, we know inherent in the act of translation is interpretation. So if you don't have the Arabic, you're always held hostage to someone else's interpretation. And so they left, went to Medina, and another family that was there, Abdurrahman and his wife Maryam. Abdurrahman was from Bermuda and Maryam was a Anglo-Canadian. So they left and went to Mecca. And, you know, another family that was there left and went to Vancouver. And I was there by myself for a minute. And I actually married someone who was American and moved to Houston. He played in the NBA, which is the professional basketball league. And after he was finished playing, the Saudis asked him to come over there and set up a basketball program. So this was a perfect opportunity for for us to go and learn the Arabic. And so while he was, you know, being a coach at the university, I went to Quran school and was able to learn Arabic and Quran and took classes at King Abdulaziz University in Islamic theology and so on, and was reunited with my friends from Toronto. I was invited to a conference in the early 90s of Muslim women in America. And at that conference, there were so many accomplished, empowered Muslim women. I was really excited, and I felt, wow, it'd be great to be able to tell their stories to everyone. And so I said, wow, we need a magazine. And so one of the women there said, oh, I have a magazine. So I said, great. And it turned out to be 8 pages of photocopied newsletter. So I said, no, we need a magazine. So all the way home on the plane, I was living in Seattle, and the conference had been in Chicago. And all the way home, I kept saying to the two friends who were flying with me, oh, we need a magazine for Muslim women, and we have to have a magazine. And so they said, oh, you should go ahead and do it. So I said, well, okay, I will. And when I got home, I sat down and wrote up the format and decided, you know, what it would look like in my head, and so that was basically the seed. Well, you know, people oftentimes ask me this question, how did the idea come about? And I think back, yes, that was the genesis, but perhaps, you know, many years before that, growing up in Toronto, when I saw no people of color reflected in the media or the textbooks or billboards, there was this real subtle internalization of, something's wrong with us as a people. And I can remember very distinctly at the age of 12 going to one of my aunt's house, and on her table was an Ebony magazine, picking it up and flipping through it and seeing people of color in positions of authority, people of color contributing positively to society. It was this validation of self. It was this, okay, we're okay after all. Even though I had, my father was a chemical engineer, we had doctors and lawyers in the family, and even though, I knew professionals, it was still this nagging feeling that, something's up. And I find that experience mirrored in women who pick up Aziza magazine for the first time. It's this validation of being, validation of identity, because it's usually the first time that they're seeing themselves portrayed positively in the media. So perhaps the kernel was planted many years before that. It's something that has been very slowly going on. The right of a woman to live in a peaceful household, the right of a woman to voice her opinions, and to autonomy. I think this is really the key right here. Does a Muslim woman have spiritual autonomy or not? And once and social autonomy, intellectual autonomy. Once you answer that question, I think everything flows from there. So if your premise is that Islam is a formula for spiritual peace, for all people, for all places, for all times, that definitely includes women. I think that, particularly in America, everybody looks to America for, certain things, culture, and everywhere I go, there's Coca-Cola and McDonald's everywhere. Not that that's the diet that you want, but I'm saying that the American cultural power is disproportionate. And likewise, I think people are also looking to Muslim Americans to see what's going on. I think that it will have a trickle-down effect or a trickle-up effect, whichever way. Because what happens is that, again, you're demanding that people put aside cultural practices and tribal practices, which have, in many instances, trumped the religion. And in some areas, really, the tribal ritual or the cultural tradition has been far more important and far more practiced than the religion. But don't forget that Islam is not contingent on your location, and and your sense of peace and your connection to Allah is, you can be a Muslim anywhere. And that's the beautiful thing about Islam. It's universal, and it has always traveled and spread. And I think that Islam is really reminiscent with the principles of North America, injustice and freedom and pursuit of fulfillment of your potential. Those are things that are, right in the American ideology, and they're right in Islam. And so there is no discordance. Actually, there is no dichotomy between being Muslim and being American. I think people think there is, that, oh my goodness, you can't be Muslim and American. And for, the children who have grown up both Muslim and American, they're saying, oh no, it's definitely not a dichotomy.